music, news, podcasts, whenever you want. The WSHU app puts it all in one place, plus playlists to keep track of what you hear. And now it's even easier to connect with us by sending feedback through the app. Download the WSHU app today, free on the App Store or Google Play.
The suspect in the Long Island serial killer case has changed his plea to guilty. Rex Heuermann of Massapequa Park was arrested in 2023 and eventually charged with murder for seven women. He admitted to killing the eighth woman today in court. The remains of all eight women had been discovered scattered throughout Long Island over several years, many along Ocean Parkway. You're listening to WSHU's After All Things with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. New York lawmakers pass another one-week budget extender. Governor Lamont looks to expand small business tax credits. Long Island needs more volunteer firefighters. Plus, we have the latest from WSHU's Digital Citizen. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. New York State lawmakers are heading back to their districts without a state budget deal in hand. The New York Public News Network's John Campbell reports.
Lawmakers at the Capitol passed another one-week budget extender, which buys them some time and ensures state workers get paid. Governor Hochul and Democratic legislative leaders have struggled to reach deals on auto insurance reform and scaling back the state's climate laws, both things the governor wants in a final budget. Lawmakers approved the extender in a bipartisan vote. But Republican Senator Tom O'Mara of the Elmira area says the secretive budget process leaves something to be desired.
It's just not a good way to do business. We should be doing better for the people of New York.
The budget was due before April 1st. The legislature will return to the Capitol on Monday, likely to pass another extender. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont wants state lawmakers to expand an R&D tax credit program for small businesses that invest in innovation. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
The program provides up to $1.5 million in tax credits to encourage small businesses to select Connecticut to develop new and improved products, processes, and technologies. Lamont visited Burke Aerospace, a small manufacturer in Farmington, to emphasize how the tax break helps create good-paying jobs.
In R&D, takes a little while. You don't get immediate cash flow back on it. So anything you do to help a smaller company that is really focused on cash flow make a difference, that's what we do.
Brittany Isherwood is the president of Burke Aerospace.
We are going to grow our workforce by 17% this year, and we are also investing millions in new equipment and technology.
The Republican minority in the state Senate responded to Lamont, saying any proposal to make Connecticut more attractive for job creators is welcome, but they also want permanent tax relief for working families. Ebong Udama, WSH News.
The number of volunteer firefighters have dropped by a third in New York State since the early 2000s, creating what some call a crisis in fire protection. The New York Public News Network's Samuel King reports one idea is to start paying volunteer firefighters a stipend.
I have four here.
Clinton Heights Fire Chief Chris Racine shows me the engines at one of the department's stations in Rensselaer County. He says of the 36 people on his roster, about 25 or 26 are active.
There's days when I feel we have enough. There's days when we feel we don't have enough.
But he says other volunteer departments are having worse staffing issues. That's why he supports state legislation that would allow districts to give stipends to volunteers who respond to calls.
I feel that a stipend program or the nominal compensation program would definitely be a recruitment tool that we would be able to use to gain new members.
But some other firefighter groups are opposed, calling it a quick fix. Sam Priscina is president of the New York State Professional Firefighters Association, representing full-time paid firefighters across the state.
We just have to take a look at every angle. We have to sit down and come up with a plan that is sustainable.
He says the best way to shore up the fire service is for more departments to transition to one staffed by both paid firefighters and trained volunteers. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
helping kids build healthy digital habits in a connected world. That's the latest from WSHU's Digital Citizen, and that's coming up. Connecticut is putting up $15 million for clean air projects across the state. The money comes from the legal settlement made in the Volkswagen Corporation emissions cheating scandal. Governor Lamont says projects include replacing, repowering, and retrofitting an array of aging diesel heavy-duty vehicles like school buses, plus off-road equipment like cargo handling vehicles. Immigration arrests on Long Island reached a record high in January, according to new data from the nonprofit Deportation Data Project. 352 people were arrested by ICE in the first month of the year and 223 in February. Governor Lamont's former budget director has asked to be removed from consideration for a position on the Superior Court. Jeffrey Beckham faced an uphill battle to confirmation by the state legislature. He's the second judicial nominee to remove himself from consideration in the last week. The U.S. Navy has launched a new facility in Bethpage to contain the Grumman plume. The toxic underground plume originated from Grumman's manufacturing plant, and it's spreading south. The $46 million groundwater treatment facility began partial operations last fall, but service was suspended in December. It's expected to run at full power by this summer.
I'm Janice Roman. Welcome to Digital Citizen, a place where we discuss the pillars of digital citizenship and help you feel empowered to engage with the online world. Today, we'll hear from Diana Graber. She's an educator and author of the book, Raising Humans in a Digital World. We'll talk about how to help kids and teens build a healthy relationship with technology. Since you published your book in 2019, there have been a lot of significant changes in society. There's been a global pandemic, TikTok, AI. With all of these changes happening, what would you say to parents who may feel overwhelmed with how to navigate that all? Where should they start?
Well, you know, I could not foresee all the changes that would happen in just a very, very short time. But I think like the premise of the book is still the same. It's not about the tools. It's about preparing your kids with the behaviors and the responsibility to use whatever new technology comes, to use it in a very safe, responsible, and wise way. So that will not change no matter what comes at us.
And how does the use of certain technology impact a child developmentally?
Yeah, so I always try to stress, I mean, as much as possible, especially when children are little, if you could really double down on the time that they have face-to-face interaction with real humans, I mean, the skills they build when they do that, the empathy and the feeling and seeing when someone's feelings are hurt because they see them crying or whatever, all of those things are indispensable skills, and they will serve them well when they do go online and they can't see facial expressions or understand how the impact of their words might feel to somebody else. So I think that's the most important thing. And really, that face-to-face time becomes important throughout the developmental cycle of a child. I mean, I would argue for adults, it's important because we want to be able to remain human and to understand that behind every screen is a real person with real feelings. And you only can understand that really if you spend that time face-to-face, you know, communicating, interacting with real humans.
There can be a lot of debate on should children have access to devices or social media, and when, if at all, that should be introduced. Are there some solid rules that parents should follow?
Well, you know, the biggest rule that, not, I wouldn't say it's a rule, but it's a guideline that you get from the American Academy of Pediatrics and all the organizations, is that when a child's using technology, especially when they're younger, to do it together with them, you know, that co-viewing and explaining, that's really indispensable and it's really key. And, you know, the way that our environment is today, I mean, media is everywhere, you know, AI is everywhere, tools are everywhere. So it's almost impossible to keep even a young child from using devices or being engaging with technology in one manner or another. So as much as possible for a child to do that with them, watch a YouTube video with them, explain AI if you're using some sort of chatbot or you're talking to Siri or whatever, explain to them what you're doing. That's not a human. This is how it works. And this is why I'm using it. all of that is really important, and it sets children up for success in the future when they start using these tools on their own. You know, it does something else really important too. When a parent shares what they're doing with technology with a child, it opens conversation. And that becomes really important as a child gets older, because they're used to talking to their parents about their digital life. And so when they run into trouble or problems, which they are going to for sure, or that something inappropriate happens, they're not afraid to talk to their parent about it because they've already established that kind of relationship. And that becomes really important as they get older.
There is sort of an interesting conversation happening now where you will have school districts that have AI curriculum and teaching digital media literacy, but also have complete cell phone bans. And so how does an educator find a balance between the two?
You know, that's the best question you've asked. I mean, I don't know. I actually go crazy over this, because you're right. On one hand, we are banning like crazy, you know, restricting kids from social media, which is just this much tiny bit of the internet, restricting them from that till they're 16. Taking the phones out of the classroom, and then on the other hand, doubling down on having kids learn in front of a computer. So it's like, what message are we sending to kids? It's like, technology is bad unless I say it's good, you know? And then secondly is, you know, you cannot ban technology from the planet. So you've got to teach a child how to use it in a safe and wise way. And, you know, when I'm teaching, I consider the cell phone is like a tool. You know, sometimes we're doing a lesson and not every child has time to pull out their laptop or whatever, you know, and they can look there and use it to look something up, or they can take a picture to reference later, or they can understand how to use it in a way that's productive and positive instead of, you know, the ways that we worry that they're sharing inappropriate information. So I think education is really stuck in a weird place right now. I mean, we have to decide, are we for or against the tools? And if we are kind of in the middle, let's educate the kids on how to use them in a safe and responsible way. And let's model that as educators in schools.
And I think you have quite an interesting perspective, because a lot of the times the conversations about technology, social media, about young people, I hear from adults. What are you hearing from children that you think the adults are not hearing?
Well, I think children would tell you that they're using it in kind of cool ways that adults aren't even curious about. And I knew that, like, I think back to, like, in classroom, kids telling me what they were putting on Snapchat. And they said I was the first adult that ever asked them that question. And that made me so sad. And, like, I remember a girl saying, my mom's never interested in what I'm doing online. And I thought, it's, for me, it's eye-opening, because I learn a lot. You know, I didn't grow up with this stuff. And so just finding out how they're using it and what they're doing with it, you know, it's pretty interesting. So right there, I think that would be the biggest thing I would tell parents is, again, ask your children, ask your students what they're doing. You'll be surprised.
Last question here. If there's anything else that you would like to add that you think it's important that our listeners hear.
Well, you know, what I think a lot about is that we are still so fixated on, you know, banning certain social media networks. And it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, we've got AI coming fast and furious. So we need to look ahead, not backwards. And really prepare these kids for AI, for an AI world, by giving them lessons in AI literacy. It is invisible and it's everywhere, and kids are interacting with it already. So we are missing the boat, educating them for the future by looking at the past. So really encourage schools and teachers to remember that AI literacy is a really important part of digital literacy and digital citizenship. It should all be taught together.
To hear the full interview, go to WSHU.org or download the WSHU app. Thanks for listening. I'm Janice Roman.
For the news you trust and music you love, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. Your old car can do a lot more than just sit in your driveway. It can help bring trusted news and beautiful music to your community. Donate it to WSHU today. The towing is free and the impact lasts. Start at WSHU.org. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak tomorrow.